All right. Time now is 5 o'clock. You're listening to In the Groove, Jazz and Beyond here on WHUS 91.7 FM, Radio for the People. And we're going to pay tribute today to one of the jazz greats who passed away yesterday. He was a great bass player, perhaps best known for his association with Ornette Coleman, but really one of the greatest players in his own right. We're going to start out with a track from Charlie Hayden and his Music Liberation Orchestra. This is called Not in Our Name. That was Charlie Hayden and the Music Liberation Orchestra, a track from an album, the title track from the album Not in Our Name. And I'm sorry, I've been saying that wrong. It's the Liberation Music Orchestra, a joint project between Charlie Hayden and Carla Bly. Carla Bly doing much of the arranging and conducting on that. Not in Our Name. That album was a protest album during the George Bush years. And titles such as This Is Not America and Blue Anthem and so forth, as well as America the Beautiful on that beautiful suite that Charlie Hayden did. Yes. All right. Time now is 5:08. We're listening to In the Groove, Jazz and Beyond. And we're going to do a tribute to Charlie Hayden. Sadly, Charlie Hayden passed away yesterday, July 11th, and was born on August 6th, 1937, in Iowa, Middle America. Charlie Hayden, perhaps best known for his work with the great Ornette Coleman, ushering in an era of free avant-garde jazz. Charlie Hayden also made a mark playing with other greats like Dewey Redman and Keith Jarrett and Alice Coltrane and many, many more. So we're going to continue on. This is a Ravi Coltrane track written by Charlie Hayden and also featuring Brandy Younger, who will be calling in a few minutes on the show so we can talk about Brandy's association with Charlie Hayden. So this is called For Toria, and it is a beautiful ballad. Thank you. That is for Toria. Ravi Coltrane doing a song written by Charlie Hayden and also featuring Brandy Younger. And if everything's working right, we have Brandy Younger on the phone right now. Brandy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Kev.
Hi, good. You're coming in loud and clear. That's great.
Good.
Yes, so Brandy Younger, a great jazz harpist, had an association with Charlie Hayden. Brandy, we're going to do a Charlie Hayden tribute today. And
awesome.
Yeah. And of course, you were on that track that we just heard. A great job, especially that introduction was wonderful.
Thank you.
But could you tell us something about your association with Charlie Hayden, how that came about, and what kind of influence he had on you musically?
Well, in a nutshell, I'm just a lucky girl because right around the time of Alice Coltrane's passing, I played her memorial here in Harlem at St. John the Divine Cathedral, which was a huge musical memorial of nearly everyone that played in her band. So the memorial was with Cecil McBee, with Charlie Hayden, Jeff Payne Watt, Jack DeJohnette, Rashid Ali, Jerry Allen, Reggie Workman. It was a huge, huge, Steve Wilson, was an awesome concert, and Ravi Coltrane, of course.
Yep.
And when Ravi called me to play the memorial, I knew we'd be doing Journey in Vachinanda. I knew we'd be doing Blue Nile and a couple of others. But he said there's this one piece that, Charlie Hayden and Alice Coltrane were very close friends. So there's a piece that Charlie wrote for my mom called Porcheria. This was back in the late 60s, recorded on the album entitled Closeness.
Yes.
Which is an album of all duets. And, Charlie talked about how he called Alice and said, I want you to play this on harp. And she said, well, no, I'll do it on piano. And he said, no, you have to play it on harp because that's what I want. Ravi told me, he says he recorded it with my mom. He's recorded it with piano players. He hasn't done it with another harpist. I want to do it for this memorial.
Yep.
And very funny that evening, we had rehearsal the night before, and Charlie said, Brandy, you played a wrong note in the second phrase. I did? Oh, I read it note for note. There's the wrong note in that second phrase. Check that out. And I'm like, okay. After the concert, Brandy, you played so beautifully. Just still play that note wrong.
Amazing.
I know. And then a couple of months later is when Robbie decided to go ahead and record it for his album, Blending Time.
Right.
And that was really a surreal experience because we flew to L.A. and we recorded it, mm-hmm. Capitol Studios, right there in the same studio where Charlie, Jack, Alice, and Robbie recorded
wow.
Translunar Light.
Yes,
her
last
album. You
know,
album. So it was a very important moment for Robbie, for Charlie. Really important moment for me. I was a kid. I
yeah?
was really a kid. And that was also the same day as a documentary that was done on Charlie entitled Rambling Boy. Part of the documentary was filmed there as well.
Oh.
So, you know, after that recording, I was just really fortunate to be able to, you know, continue to rehearse and play with him for some more memorials that were organized of Alice's music.
Yeah.
And for Taria in particular, it's something that Robbie still plays on his sets. It's something that I play on my sets. And when I'm around with the harp, Robbie still calls me to play it. It's just the most beautiful, beautiful piece, you know, written for Alice.
Yeah, well, I play it often on my show, and I really believe it's one of the most beautiful, heartfelt ballads in modern jazz music. It's an amazing track, an amazing recording. Well, before the recording, did Charlie or Ravi, did they, you know, did they guide you in any way or talk about what the, you know, what that piece meant to them?
I, of course, knew what it meant. I knew, you know, Ravi was clear. I knew that they recorded it, you know, I'm not sure what year, 69 or 70 or 71.
Yeah.
I knew that no other harpist had recorded it. I knew, you know, Taria is what Alice was affectionately known as. Her spiritual name was Taria Sachidananda. So I absolutely knew the meaning behind the piece before we recorded it, which, you know, makes it all the more nerve-wracking. But it was a really not just special but emotional moment, as Robbie and his mother were very close.
Right.
Alice and Charlie were very close.
Right.
John
Coltrane had passed away very early in Ravi's youth. So
right.
His mother was brought, you know, his mother was everything to him, yeah.
Right. Alice was the main figure. So I understood the position I was in.
Yeah.
And just the importance of that piece in particular, because we did record two other pieces.
Ah,
they didn't go on the album.
Really? What happened to those?
They didn't make the cut. They didn't make the cut. But that piece in particular, it had so much meaning, and there were so many more takes. And I say, Robbie, why don't you use that take? I don't like that take.
Wow.
I don't like the intro. And he said, this one spoke to me. He said they all spoke to me, but this one really spoke to me. And he did tell me, he gave me some guidance. He said, I want glissandi in the beginning of the recording, just like my mom did. So keep that there. Do your own thing with it. And then open up.
Yeah.
So a little guidance.
Yeah.
And as long as I got the right note, Charlie was happy.
Yeah. Last time we heard that was at the, Claire and I, my wife Claire and I were at the Village Vanguard, and you were there as well. And we heard Ravi Coltrane perform that with your friend and mine, Desron Douglas, on
Desron
bass. And he did a great job perhaps trying to emulate Charlie Hayden's playing on that. So it's
right.
Great.
Right.
All right. So, a harp player in jazz is a rare thing. I'm sure you're always compared to, you know, the comparison to Alice Coltrane must always come up. I think your playing is really different and unique, and it shows up a lot on your album as well. But what was your inspiration for picking up the harp in jazz music, to play jazz music? And what were your, who were your influences, both harp players and non-harp players?
Well, the complete honest answer is, you know, I went to school to study classical music, and there was just a disconnect. There was a social disconnect. There was a cultural disconnect. So when I was at Hart, I completed my coursework. I did what I had to do.
Yep.
And then I would go to Steve Davis and Nat Reeves Ensemble and watch. I would go to the master classes and watch. And that's what I did. I would go and talk to Jackie McLean in his office and just stick my nose everywhere. There was really more of a community, a family feeling that I got in the jazz department at school that I didn't get in the classical department.
Yep.
So, you know, I never really thought about my instrument because I was studying classical music and I wasn't playing jazz. I was just going to everything. So I understood the music. I could relate to it. I was fulfilling my duties in school, if that makes sense. So I didn't really start to play. Really, I mean, I took some lessons with Nat. I did some things. I never played in public, you know.
Yeah.
It never left the practice room. But Nat was really, really kind and hooked me up with Kenny Garrett, where I started to work out some musical ideas with him. And then that following year was the Memorial for Alice Coltrane, which is probably the moment where I decided, I think I want to do this. Let's take it on.
So was this, this was like in your second year of college or how?
No, this was after college.
After college?
I was out. I'm kind of old.
All right.
I completed 2 degrees at Hart by this time. I finished in Hart Performance and Music Management, my bachelor's. So this was after school.
Oh.
After school, and then I entered graduate school in New York here at NYU.
Yep.
For
those listeners who, particularly podcast listeners who don't know, Hart is University of Hartford, Hart School of Music, and the jazz program there that was led by Jackie McLean.
Right. So, in terms of influences, you know, before I even got to college, my parents bought me this Alice Coltrane CD, and Blue Nile was like, oh my gosh, I love this song so much. And that was it for me. I was like, I want to do this. I don't know what it takes, so I'm going to sit here and finish learning my Bach and Handel and whatnot, you know. and I'm gonna figure that out down the line. Who knew I'd be playing her memorial, you know, just 4 or 5 years later.
Wow, yeah.
And it's funny, I spent my years in college. You know how people are obsessed with John Coltrane? I was obsessed with Alice, and I would write her these letters and never send them in because they were never good enough, you know? I have got, like, handwritten letters. It's really weird how the stars do align in your favor.
I guess so.
it's incredible. It's incredible. So in terms of my style of playing, so Alice has always been an influence, and Dorothy Ashby has always been an influence. Carol Robbins has always been an influence, and I found Carol because she studied with Dorothy, you know, so everything always points back to Detroit. Everything points back to Alice and Dorothy, and my style, actually, I don't know if Robbie knew he was doing this at the time, but when I started to work with Ravi, it was a real impressionable point. I was in graduate school studying classical music, and I was also working in jazz, you know, in whether it was big band, quartet, anyone's group I can play in.
Yeah.
So anything I did with him, he would really just say, I want you to do what you want to do, but I want you to incorporate elements of my mom, Dorothy, and Carlos Salcedo. In a nutshell, that means my mom's playing, which is more spiritual.
Yes.
The pentatonic sound that John often played.
Yeah.
Plus Dorothy, which is straight up bebop.
Right.
Plus Carlos Salcedo, who is very traditional classical, who is also a major influence on John Coltrane.
Really? Yeah. Well, that is a name I'm not familiar with at all. I'll have to check.
Well, Carlos Salcedo is a harpist, one of our harp forefathers, French. Master of harp. So Ravi. So he wanted that sound. He wanted the spiritual. He wanted the jazz, and he wanted the classical, all smushed up in a bowl.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, that's what my sound has become.
Yes.
Add my young age to it.
Yeah. Well, I think particularly listen to the new album. I really think you've come out on your own, and really, I think it's more blues based than anything else, which is kind of different. But blues and bebop.
Certain tunes I'll comp rhythmically, and then certain tunes, it's clear as day that I'm playing a harp. You know,
yeah.
I make sure I'm doing all these arpeggios. Look, I'm playing a harp, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely has the rhythm. I don't know, to me, it sounds like the rhythm is the focal point, and then your harp on top of that.
Right.
And you do a great version of Blue Nile on that, that actually is kind of a meld between Journey. Doesn't it start out with a sort of a comp of Journey to Satya Dananda and kind of morph into?
I did throw that bass line in there. Yeah,
nice.
We did.
Nice. And Dez is on electric bass, which I haven't heard him do on recording before.
You know what? You're about to hear it, because this Blue Note compilation is coming out, and I'm on it, and he's playing electric, and Gary Bartz is on the compilation. He's playing electric on Gary Bartz's song, too.
Oh.
So, yeah, Dez has always played electric, but many of the jazz world, they don't know it.
Right.
He's always on upright.
Right. Let's talk about your album before we finish up here. So you have an album, a live recording.
Yes, my quartet Live at the Breeding Ground, which is, we did it very last minute. We said, you know, let's record this gig and release it, because I have two studio records sort of sitting right now.
Uh-huh.
And I really wanted to release something, because
yeah.
all I have out is my EP, my four-song EP, which is just trio, which isn't even what I've been playing for the past few years.
Yeah.
I've been playing everything quartet. So I really wanted to get something out and get it out fast. So someone suggested, Brandy, just record one of your gigs and release a live album.
Yeah.
And then put your studio stuff out in you know, in your time. So
right.
I said, not a bad idea. So we just went in and did it.
Okay. And the quartet, you want to mention who's in the quartet?
The quartet is EJ Strickland on drums, Desron Douglas on both upright and electric bass, Chelsea Barrett on tenor sax, and also Stacey Dillard on soprano sax.
Right. All right. Yeah, it's a great album. It's a live recording, as you said. You really get the feel of perhaps one of your gigs at a club. So I think it worked out well. And where can they get that?
You can... It may be on iTunes. I'll have to double check if it's popped up yet. But anyway, just go to my website, www.brandyyounger.com, where there's a link where you can buy downloads.
Yep.
And you can also buy a hard copy.
Great. And how about gigs? You got any gigs coming up?
Actually, we'll be in Detroit at the Detroit Institute of the Arts August 22nd for Zuma Dorothy Ashby tribute.
Oh.
And also at Mittens Jazz Club in New York City on August 10th.
Okay. Great. Definitely recommend going out to see Brandy Younger in one of her live gigs. We've caught a couple of them here in the Hartford area, and it's great. All right.
Thank you
so much. We're going to play a couple tracks from your album. I'm going to play.
Thank you so much, Ken.
You're welcome. We're going to play, let's see, Wax and Wayne, and that is going to be followed by Awareness. He has a name. Do you want to briefly mention something about Awareness and the inspiration behind that?
Yeah, so Awareness is a recording. The song I wrote in memory of Trayvon Martin.
Right.
I wrote it, you know, a few years ago, right around the time of the shooting. And it's just something that impacted me really, that situation, just because I've got a little brother. Looks just like Trayvon, same age, and also I've lost a lot of high school mates to violence.
Ah.
So it really hit close to home. I wrote that piece. We recorded it. You know, the live version is a different version.
I
recorded two other. Do you like this one?
I like the live version. Yeah, I think Stacy does a tremendous job, really plays from the heart on it.
And that is Stacy's song. Stacy owns it. Stacy owns it. I really wish that we had other concerts recorded, because I mean, Stacy is, he's like this, I don't know, I can't even explain him. It's like he's not human. It's like he's not human with that song. That song in particular, from the first day I wrote it, he just took it.
I picked up on that. You really can tell that it means something to him. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know if I should tell you this or not, but we recorded Awareness at the Breeding Ground, and it didn't record. It didn't record.
Oh.
The engineer didn't. I don't know what happened with the button. We had to re-record it. We were so angry.
So that's not at the Breeding Ground?
It is, but we didn't know it didn't record until after, so we just played it again. And
okay.
But what you missed was what happened, and it's gone in time.
Oh, well, the one that's there is pretty good.
Thank you. Definitely Stacy's song.
Okay. All right, well, are you going to be coming to the Hartford area anytime soon?
Farmer's Market on the 23rd of this month. We'll probably just do saxophone, harp, and bass, probably.
The 23rd of this month?
Yeah, Wednesday.
Oh. Well, maybe I'll see you there.
Okay.
All right. Thanks again, Brandy.
Thank you, Ken.
All right.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's the Brandy Younger Quartet from her album, Brandy Younger Quartet Live at the Breeding Ground. And we heard two tracks, starting with Wax and Wayne, and then Awareness, He Has a Name. As you just heard, a song written for Trayvon Martin. And again, I want to thank Brandy Younger for spending the time with us here on WHUS and jazzandbeyond.com. It was great hearing from her. It was a very interesting interview. I might as well mention where you can get that album. You can get that album from her website, brandyyounger.com, and that'll link you to the Bandcamp website where you can download the album in MP3 or several other formats, or get the real physical CD. So definitely head over to brandyyounger.com. That's Brandy, B-R-A-N-D-E-E, Younger, Younger.com. All right, so we're going to continue on now with a tribute to Charlie Hayden, the great bass player who passed away yesterday. So we're going to hear a couple tracks, starting with one from Ornette Coleman. Maybe Ornette's most famous composition, perhaps, Lonely Woman. But we're going to, before we get into that, we're going to hear a little clip from Charlie Hayden from a recent documentary called Rambling Boy. I think Brandy mentioned that while we were talking. But this is a clip. So this is Charlie Hayden.
And I was forming the Liberation Music Orchestra. I mean, there was so much music going on. One day, this was right after my triplet daughters were born, Ornette called me and said, I have an offer from George Wein to go to Europe with the Newport Jazz Festival tour, and it's going to be Duke Ellington and Miles Davis's band, which also had Keith in it, and Dexter Gordon's band. He said, you got to come. And I said, man, we just had these babies. I can't leave. You know, he said, you got to come. And so I decided to go. When we got over to Europe, I saw on the itinerary that we were going to be playing in Portugal, and I went to Ornette's room, and I said, I don't want to play in Portugal. And he said, why? And I said, because they have colonies in Mozambique and Angola and Guinea-Bissau, and they're systematically wiping out the black race there, you know, and I don't want to play there. It's a dictatorship, fascist government, Salazar and now Caetano. And he said, well, I've signed a contract. We've got to play. He said, think of something you can do. We're on stage in Cascais, which was a resort area of Portugal outside of Lisbon. Many, many thousands of people were there. It came time for my tune, and I bent over to the mic and I said, I want to dedicate this song to the Black People's Liberation Movements in Mozambique.
This next song is dedicated to the Black People's Liberation Movement of Mozambique.
Before I could get the rest of the colonies, pandemonium broke out, cheering, yelling, screaming. I looked over at Ornette and he was like, you know, adjusting his reed. And Dewey and Blackwell raised their arms, you know, which was really something else. We started to play and you couldn't even hear the song. It was amazing. And then after the concert, I thought they were going to take me in right there, you know. They took me to the hotel. Of course, I didn't sleep all night, and next morning we started to check out. The phone rang at reception, and it was Dexter Gordon. And he said, Charlie, thank you for what you did last night. He said, it should have been done a long time ago. I just want you to know that you got my blessing, you know. I think that was great, and that made me feel so good, man. And Miles was standing on the stairs, and he looked at me and he said, you crazy motherfucker. I said, oh, man. Hi, Miles. How you doing, man?
Hey,
all of a sudden, the guy behind the counter at TWA come around to me and he said, "Mr. Hayden, those gentlemen over there want to interview you." And I said, "Well, I don't want to be interviewed. I want to get on the plane." He said, "Well, you can't get on the plane right now. You have to be interviewed by those gentlemen." And Ornette said, "I'm not getting on the plane without Charlie." And they said, "We're sorry. You have to get on the plane." And they took the guys and put them on the plane. And I'm standing there with my luggage and base in the middle of the airport. They started shooting questions at me. And I said, "Look, I'm a United States citizen, and I want to see somebody from the embassy." And the guy looked at me and said, "It's Sunday. The embassy's closed, Mr. Hayden. You should not mix politics with music." Tears started rolling down my cheeks because I said, "Man, I'm not going to see my son or my babies again." They took me to the prison, shoved me inside this dark room and closed the door. And I was there, I don't know how many hours, maybe a day or two. I was very scared. And then finally somebody came and they took me to an interrogation room filled with these really bright lights and started questioning me. Finally, another guy walks in the room and comes over to the lead interrogator and whispers something in his ear. And the guy's expression completely changed. He smiled and he said, "Mr. Hayden, you're a very lucky man. There's someone, the cultural attaché is upstairs from the American Embassy to retrieve you." I said, "Boy, do I want to be retrieved."
Thank you.
Time is 6:04. This is WHUS Storrs, Connecticut.
Thank you.
Yes, Charlie Hayden. We heard a long set of music featuring Charlie Hayden. The last one you heard was from his solo album Nocturne, and you heard Tres Palabras, three words, is its meaning, I believe. It was, as I said, from the album Nocturne from 2001. And let's see, that one features Charlie Hayden on bass, Gonzalo Rubalcaba on piano, Ignacio Baroa on drums, and some beautiful tenor sax work by David Sanchez. Before that, we heard from Keith Jarrett, Everything That Lives Laments, from the album Mysteries. And that is a great quartet. Featuring Keith Jarrett on piano, Dewey Redman on tenor saxophone, Charlie Hayden on bass, and Paul Motion on drums, along with Guillermo Franco on percussion. And before that, we heard the classic Lonely Woman from The Shape of Jazz to Come, an Ornette Coleman song, featuring Ornette Coleman on alto sax, Don Cherry on coronet, Charlie Hayden on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. That was great. Ornette Coleman quartet that perhaps launched avant-garde and free jazz. I read an article in Slate Magazine about Charlie Hayden today. In case anybody tuned in late, let me just mention Charlie Hayden, the great bass player, passed away yesterday at age, I think it was about 76 years old. And as I was mentioning, I read an article in Slate Magazine. Charlie Hayden is perhaps known as a free jazz player or avant-garde jazz player. But really, if you look at his solo work, it is primarily slow ballads, Latin ballads, as you heard in that last track, folk songs, spirituals. So he was really a romantic. His music is that of a romantic, not necessarily just a free avant-garde player. So we will miss the great Charlie Hayden. He had such a unique, deep, bellowy sound coming out of his bass. All right, we're going to continue on with some more music. There was a new album recently released by Brian Blade and the Fellowship Band. And that band is going to be at Newport Jazz Festival. We're starting to get geared up for our annual trek to the Newport Jazz Festival. And we're looking forward to hearing Brian Blade and the Fellowship Band. So here's one from his latest album. It's called Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas. Thank you.
Thank you.